Thank you for tuning into KPCRadio.com on Inside the Game. Ethan Hansen won't be with us today. We are joined by Tyler McGee. Tyler, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. We have a lot of sports, a lot of football to get into. MLB playoffs right around the corner. We want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about the NFL and its scandals that keep on coming up. Jonathan Dwyer, the newest person added to the list. What are your thoughts?
Just a horrible time to be associated with the NFL. Even just being a fan of the NFL is making it very difficult right now with the way that you're seeing things handled, especially from the players. If you kind of read through the Twitter sphere, you have Steve Smith, Darnell Dockett kind of sounding off on it, you know, in a positive light, saying, how can these guys do this? You're wasting your dream and opportunity. You know, Steve Smith saying, you know, women are here for us to lean on, not to beat on.
And that's very true. I thought, for those who don't know, Jonathan Dwyer is the latest football player who was recently arrested for beating his girlfriend at the time, an 18-month-old child. So that's just adding on to what Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice already did. Adrian Peterson, who kind of got to me and pissed me off a bit, that what the Minnesota Vikings did, is they deactivated him last week's game against New England, was it?
New England at home, yeah.
And they lost that game. And then right after, they come out and they said they're going to let the legal department deal with it and let the NFL or whatever, and they're going to reinstate him, which pissed, you know, I knew right away, everyone knew at that time you're doing the wrong, you know, wrong decision. If you didn't learn anything from Ray Rice, you know, this is a child. He beat his four-year-old kid. He had a room designated to beating his kid. And the one thing that really bothers me is when people keep on mentioning, you know what, when I was a kid, this is how we did it, 1950s, 1970s. Well, that's not an excuse. Being hit as a child never justifies you to hit someone else. I don't care what happened, not that, whatever happened to you, and doesn't give you an excuse to do something wrong to someone else. And Tony Dungy, who is worried about Michael Sam causing a distraction, apparently having a kid, someone that beats up a child is not as big of an issue, because when Tony Dungy was a child, that's what happened to him. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you look at it, a lot of it is a cultural thing of the South with switches. You know, it's my mom kind of grew up in the area, great-grandma, you know, kids do something bad, it's, you know, you go out to the backyard there and you pull out your own switch through there. So it's something that every kid kind of grew up with in the area. So whether or not that they use it in their own teachings as a parent or not is something that they go through. Adrian Peterson obviously decided, you know, this has kind of made me who I am with, you know, discipline and stuff like that, so I'm going to use that in my own children's cases. The problem that I think a lot of people are starting to see is just a year ago, Adrian Peterson lost a son to abuse in there. So it's, you know, you lost a son, but you're still going to hit your kids. It's something that probably doesn't sit well with a lot of people.
But it's not only the physical damage that's done, the psychological. The on the police report, this child, when he was talking with investigators, or they pulled it, he said that he was afraid to notify anyone the way his father was beating him. Open wounds we're talking about, because he was afraid his father was going to punch him in the face. No child should ever have to worry about that.
No, of course not.
So I think, you know, and then the Minnesota Vikings, so when they come in, they reinstate this guy to play football. And then a couple days later, the sponsors of the Minnesota Vikings said that they're suspending sponsorship.
Yeah. Radisson came in and said that they're going to suspend, you know, their sponsorship of the Vikings for right now. And then, you know,
immediately all of a sudden the Vikings legal issue isn't that much of a problem. All of a sudden it's, you know, they put him on a commissioner exempt list, which I'm still trying to figure out what that is.
It's, you know, he's suspended from team activities. He's not going to be around the team, but he's still getting paid.
He's getting paid. So is it dealt with the commissioner, or is it dealt with the team, or is it
mutual? It sounds like it's more of a a commissioner thing. I think a lot of ways people are thinking is that, you know, when they reinstated him, the press was kind of going around and it's not positive. The NFL came back in. It's like, hey, you know, there's this list here that you can kind of put them away for right now and let things cool down.
But it really just shows that all the NFL really does care about, they come out, they say they care about, you know, domestic abuse, domestic violence, but it comes down to money. The second sponsors stop backing away from the NFL, I think that's when you'll see the NFL take a stronger stance. And I think that's what happened here. You know, he was reinstated a couple of days after, nothing, and they claim they're going to wait for the legal department to take care of it and see what, you know, what the results are. nothing changed legally in the past 2 weeks. Well, since he was reinstated.
He hasn't had, the aspect from the law kind of change. It's just, the court of public opinion has definitely changed in the last 4 days.
Correct. Well, the public opinion, they knew that was going to happen. To them, it was just more important because they needed to get some wins on the, on the field.
Yeah.
But as soon as their sponsors backed out, you saw that, what took place there. So I don't know. This whole, the NFL has a PR nightmare, probably one of the worst months in NFL history.
Definitely one of the worst on there. Recent memory is you're going to go back to Michael Vick with his whole situation before, with the weed in the water bottle and going into the dog fighting.
Well, the thing with Michael Vick wasn't so much, that was more of a Michael Vick scandal in the NFL, and he played for the NFL, so that had an effect. Here we're talking about the NFL potentially, not with Adrian Peterson, but potentially trying to cover it up with Ray Rice. And then a couple days later, you have an incident with Adrian Peterson and now Jonathan Dwyer. And everything's just coming out, when it rains, it pours. Is coming out at once, so the NFL has a lot to worry about.
Well, you also have Greg Hardy over the summer with his grand jury indictment that he's kind of appealing, so he was able to play, and now he's on the same commissioner's exempt list.
Correct.
On there. But you also have Ray McDonald, who's the day that the NFL announces their stronger penalties and stuff like that, it comes out that he has an arrest over the night.
And we thought he was going to be the first one to be disciplined. Nothing has happened yet, And back to Greg Hardy, the same thing. The Carolina Panthers, he played for the Carolina Panthers in week one. What changed from week one to week two? It's just the outcry by the public. But that just shows that they're not doing it for the right reasons. If you're just relying, that's why, because everyone's going to stop, boycott our games or, not watch us on television or whatever. That's why you're not doing it with the right intentions.
No, it's the NFL should have been ahead of this, knowing, we've had some problems in the past. Let's, make a stand foot, because the NFL is clearly making a move for a more female audience, because the way that mothers protect their sons, they don't want them to play football, maybe concussions. So let's get ahead of this, make it more female-friendly, because if you're going to have a bunch of child beaters and women beaters on your rosters, it's going to turn off a lot of women from watching your games.
They dropped the ball in the Ray Rice in that incident.
Definitely. That's why a lot of people are after Commissioner Goodell now. Wanting to see where he's going with things, the independent reviews going through.
So what are your thoughts on Commissioner? We didn't have you when we discussed that. I'm outraged with him. I think, in a way, if true that he saw the video and he tried, I think he has to go.
Well, if he saw the video or, he had talked to Ray Rice, Ray Rice is saying, I talked to him, I told him that I clearly hit my wife on there, he's probably has to go. I mean, if he has, as the commissioner of the NFL, and he's not doing his full job to see these videos that was sent to the NFL, that people are saying that was sent to the NFL, he should go.
I agree with that 100%. Also, another thing to mention, you don't need – this is when he handed the two-game suspension, if he knew of everything that that everything that took place in the elevator, you don't need a video to understand what – to hand just a two-game suspension. He should have been out 10 games, maybe the year – after the first incident. What do you think? They just both went on an elevator when the elevator, came to the whatever floor they were heading off on. One person was just knocked out.
Yeah.
And what do you think? They lost oxygen up there. So and I said this a couple times, is I don't think you need a video to understand what happened there. And that's what's so disturbing about the NFL. That when the two-game suspension came out, I was outraged. I think many people were outraged. It's a weak stance for, someone that, committed a serious crime.
No, the NFL and Roger Goodell, you don't have to see the video. The video just kind of backs up what people are saying. So you can kind of see exactly if, Ray Rice is following what actually occurred on the video. And that's where a lot of people, I think, are off. It's like, you clearly see something was going on in there. And Ray Rice should have been gone a lot more than two games.
And I think if the NFL would have handled this correctly when it started, when it first came out, and there are two things to keep in mind. This story came out, I think, in February, the video. The NFL didn't suspend him till a couple months after that. So they took their time on that.
Well, the one thing that they should do is, if you're looking at it, the indefinite suspension that Ray Rice has now that he's appealing probably should have came down in February. Just step away. We're already in the offseason.
Correct.
Don't come back in for right now. Let things settle out. Let the legal courts take action, because you don't want to overstep what the law's already doing. From there, just for his own personal rights and stuff like that. Let the courtroom work itself out, and then we'll decide if there's any more penalties that need to occur on there. It's what they probably should have done, and they'll probably do in the future.
Well, let's hope, because you'd think they would learn the lesson, but the Minnesota Vikings didn't, the Carolina Panthers didn't, everyone. It's the bottom line is if you can play football, they want you on the field, no matter they what happens on the outside, as much as they try claiming they do. But I think now they're kind of forced that the public has forced their hand on, you know, certain situations.
No, it's, you know, if you can play football, you're going to find yourself somewhere having a job in the NFL.
Just ask Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL. And the Goodell is known as the hard commissioner. Players didn't like him so much because he was very strict when it came to, you know, personal conduct policy. And then this kind of just could be... This could cost him his job potentially. Somewhere that makes $44 million a year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was his salary last year. But I expected him
well,
to
the other
do
one,
a better
it's,
job.
It's not just his handling of the player's situation right now. There's also Jim Irsay, who's the owner of the Colts, that has his own problems right now.
Yeah, a lot of owners. And I think Jerry Jones is also under investigation for something.
Jerry Jones, he has the photo that kind of went online, and now there's a case that's going along with the photo with allegations that the Cowboys are kind of just brushing off, saying, you know, it's a money play, things like that.
And then you had Haslam, the owner of the Browns. He's under investigation. So it's not just a player thing. It's an owner thing also. How do you think the NFL can repair their image?
You know, that's a very difficult question because there's a lot of steps.
I'll think
that'll
take a long time. But what can they do now to try to make things right?
The first one is with the hirings that they've made in the last week. You know, they have the three women committee to kind of look at to the NFL rules and stuff, how they can reform and regulate things a little better when it pertains to sexual assault and, you know, assault on women and children. And then they also have to hire Tuesday, the former White House staffer, that she's going to be a vice president of the NFL is with connecting to government and social issues. So having that already is a good start, but the NFL just needs to do a little more, harder suspensions right up front, you know, and definitely be a little more active in their communities with this.
And how can they get more active? Because I agree with that. I think within their communities, you know, I was listening to the radio the other day driving the car, and apparently since the Ray Rice video came out, the domestic, you know, abuse hotline has been ringing off. You know, it gave people the courage to come out and to speak, because I think 70% of domestic violent cases don't get reported. So I think, you know, now if the NFL could make more active, either by donating money or speaking out or having, you know, people speak against it and educate people on it, it could definitely, you know, work.
I mean, money goes a long ways, and the NFL does have deep pockets. But
I think
in the long term, what they really need to do is have, you know, faces of the NFL and, you know, faces that are current in the NFL kind of be out front and do a lot of things with groups and organizations and inside the community to kind of raise awareness and kind of stop crimes from happening in the future, maybe.
All right, let's switch topics. Let's go to the football games. What are your thoughts of last week?
It's another different week in the NFL. You know, kind of look what goes around. You know, Atlanta playing in a tough game. The week before, it gets another tough game against Cincinnati.
And what are your surprises? Because we have the Bills 2-0. Surprising. Well, you always have, which is a bit of an issue. Certain fan bases, you always get that false hype. Your team starts off 4-1, 6-2, end off 8-8. The Bills seem like that team every year. The Lions seem like that team every year. Once in a while, you know, the Raiders are that team.
Well, I think the Raiders have the hope that every year we're going to be a playoff team, but it turns out that they're, you know, middle of the first round or early in the draft there.
5-11.
But the biggest one is, I think, the Cowboys fans that think that they're going to win the Super Bowl every year with Tony Romo and then end up at 8-8.
8-8 and just missing a game because Tony Romo threw a pick or something in the fourth quarter. Do you think the Bills are for real this year? They have.
You look at their defense, especially at the second end there, they can definitely have the stoppages to go through there. They have a young offense, you know, Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins, and
EJ Manuel
at their quarterback.
Spiller.
They have a good contingency at the running back between Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller. If they can find time between the guys, they have a nice different change of pace.
C.J. Spiller always
scares
me at the running back because he seems like that type of running back you can't rely consistently, you know, in every game to do something. He seems like one game he'll give you like, you know, 10 carries, 16 yards. Next game he'll have like 4 carries and he'll burst out for 120.
Yeah, I mean, it just game planning and stuff and who has the ball at the right time, because you can have, somebody miss a block on one play and it blows it up, or, you make the block and you're gone for 50 yards. So it's all just, it's a fluky system sometimes.
Houston, what do you think about Houston? I think the most dominant offensive player is J.J. Watt, and he plays defense. We knew going in, that last year everyone knew they weren't the worst team in the NFL. They had a problem at the quarterback position. This year, now that they don't have Matt Chubb, it's not like they have, who's their starting quarterback? They traded for someone from New England, I forgot his name off the top of my mind, but he's doing all right. But J.J. Watt and that defensive line, their entire defense looks scary.
Well, Ryan Mallett came in from New England to Houston on there to down the line maybe take over the position and do something with it. But the biggest thing is their defense. You look at, you have J.J. Watt, who's probably the best defensive end in football right now.
Or defensive player in football.
He can go that far as well.
He just disrupts that line, and he got the money he deserves recently with this contract extension. But he had a touchdown the other week. If I'm an offensive tackle, I have nightmares. If I know I'm going up against him the next day.
Yeah, it's definitely one that you don't want to see J.J. Watt across from you, especially when he's healthy. If you have Clowney on the other end, he's going to miss some time with the meniscus in the knee. But if he can stay healthy and
they got Cushing back, Brian Cushing, their linebacker.
That's the other one. Houston's always had a good solid linebacker core. Maybe not the top names that you'd expect, or like a Patrick.
Yeah, he's a very solid player, Cushing. But Saints 0-2. That's my biggest surprise so far down the line. And I wish, not only because I have Jimmy Graham on fantasy football, but they got to target him more. And they did that towards the end of last game, and they scored for it. But what are your thoughts on the Saints? Are they an 0-2 team? Their defenses look very shaky under Rob Ryan this year. Do you think they'll work things out?
Their defense just hasn't been able to stop anybody. You got to find some strength on your defense, because you're playing in the NFC South. You're going to throw the ball a lot there. So whether it's, finding some consistency with the younger players that they have, changing out the wideout positions, or targeting Jimmy Graham a little more. But Jimmy Graham can't do everything himself, and I don't think he wants to necessarily, because he can't dunk it anymore when he gets into the end zone.
He probably would have before his hearing of him, whether he's a tight end or wide receiver.
Yeah.
But now, no. But they also have Cooks, the rookie wide receiver, who's doing fantastic in week one. I don't know how well he did in week two, but I don't know. The Saints, that offense is so scary when it's hitting on all cylinders. And then they traded away Sproles. How has Sproles looked in Philadelphia? Wow.
Sproles, right off the start in Philadelphia, has looked very good. Kind of a rejuvenation of his career.
And he's perfect under Chip Kelly's offense over there. Philadelphia is one of those teams, they could run 10 plays and have like 500 yards. They have to slow their offense down just to keep their defense to get a breather, because their defense on the field, let's say 10 plays, 6 minutes of time, and then they come on offense. Nick Foles, three passes, and then a couple runs by LeSean McCoy. They take a minute 15 off the clock. The defense is back out there, and they keep on doing that. So that's
Yeah, you kind of look at it, but that's, the Eagles are 2-0, and they're the first team in NFL history to start 2-0 after being down 14 points in both starting games there.
Yeah, and I think it was against Jacksonville week one. They were down, was it 20 or something?
They were down big early to Jacksonville. So Alan Hearns going off.
Yeah, and then the second half, just a couple plays, it was tie game. And I think they ended up, when I turned in, they were being destroyed by Jacksonville. I turned in again, they were tied, and then I come back, they win big. And then he had them on Monday night, against Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that's Andrew Luck. You look at it, first pick of the draft, replacing Peyton Manning. Everyone's expecting him to be the next great Peyton Manning, the new type of quarterback where he's not necessarily going to beat you physically. He's going to beat you with his mind and kind of do things a lot there.
He looked fantastic his first. He looks really good his first couple of years, which brings me to RG3. They were compared, both can't miss. But RG3, he had a great first year, injuries a little bit after that, and part of, because of his being a mobile quarterback. What are your thoughts? He may be out for this coming season.
Honestly, you look at it, it's with the knee injury. Was he mismanaged by Mike Shanahan that first year? Should he have been out there for the playoff game? Probably not. If he's a mobile quarterback, he has a bad knee. Let's get him out of the game.
Yeah.
Especially with that stadium, the way that their grass turns, late November there in D.C., it's not the best.
And what do you think about Kirk Cousins replacing him?
you know, Kirk Cousins, same draft class. You know, later, I think he was a sixth or seventh round pick.
I remember when everyone in Washington, I think he was early a third rounder or fourth. Everyone in Washington was like, why are you picking this guy? We just picked a quarterback. But Kirk Cousins actually looked really good replacing RG3. I mean, he had up and down last year a bit when he replaced RG3 a couple times. But in general, he managed the game and he looked very solid.
Well, Kirk Cousins, you know, going from Michigan State and stuff, he's a winner. He knows how to get things done through there.
Correct. And Michigan State, I think, had four quarterbacks that went 4-0 last week. They had Drew Stanton, who plays for the Arizona Cardinals.
Filling in for Carson Palmer.
And then they got, like we said, Kirk Cousins. They got Nick Foles, who played for Michigan State.
Yeah.
He was there as a redshirt, I think. And he plays for the Eagles. And there was one other slipped my mind.
Yeah, I can't think of it at this time.
There were four. There were for sure three.
Yeah, definitely a good week for Michigan State quarterbacks in the NFL.
Not too good of a week was it for them a couple weeks ago against Oregon.
No, definitely. Started out well, didn't finish well.
Started off as a great game. And like Oregon, back to the chip, in a couple plays, the game was over. I mean, I think Michigan was even up at one point. Couple plays, Oregon, bam, bam, bam. It looks like they destroyed. And the game is a lot. There was a lot closer than what the score indicated.
You definitely look at a tale of two halves on there. Marcus Mariota, when he gets going, it definitely changes into another gear.
Wow, doesn't he look good? Wow, he's got to be one of the most dominant college players. You think he'll be he's eligible for the draft this upcoming season?
Yeah, this is going to be his third year, even though he's kind of listed a little under. But he was redshirted the year, so he's 3 years now removed from high school, so he's eligible for the
Cleveland Browns
draft.
Are calling?
I don't think so. You know, it's
Johnny Manziel, but he has potential to be the number one pick.
At this point, yeah, because you look at it, Jameis Winston's kind of having off-the-field issues again.
I think, doesn't Jameis Winston need another year, or did he redshirt too?
He redshirted a year, so he was a redshirt freshman last year when he won the Heisman national title, but he'll be eligible for the draft this year.
The thing in the NFL, I don't think they charge you for their buffet food, so I think that'll be fine there. So so I don't think he'll run into issues with that. But no. And now his recent...
You can't stand on too many desks in the NFL. They don't like that.
They're not fond of that. Yeah. But what do you think about him? He's being suspended for the first half of the game against Clemson.
You know, first half suspensions to me always seem very weak.
I know. I was just going to say, I love when coaches... It drives me nuts. It's kind of laughable, especially when the week one. So they do something wrong in the offseason, in college we're talking about. And then week one's always these matchups like... one dominant team versus some team that you expect them to beat anyways, like 67-4, 3.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the SEC's go-to where you have, you know, the Citadel playing right before you play Auburn or something.
Exactly. Like, and then a game this is against Clemson, which is a good team. But usually, I never understood the half-game suspension. Like, against Appalachian State, you know, Florida State's going to suspend James Winston for a half. Come to half, and I think Johnny Manziel was his first game
Rice
the year
last year.
Against, the game was over, I think, before he even entered.
Well, no, that one was a close game at the point. I think it was a tie to a 3-point game on there.
Oh, what? Okay.
And Johnny Manziel came in and then took over on there and kind of gave him the money sign a few times because they were kind of razzing Johnny a little bit.
Why was he suspended for the first half of that game?
That goes back to his the signature thing that he did with the autograph
for money.
Guy.
Okay, yeah, things. Wow, that was a while back. Much Johnny Manziel stories took place since then. His Manning camp issue, you know, and now his
Vegas.
He finds a way to make headlines.
Yeah, he's been involved in Drake songs since then. Has Snickers commercials.
Although since the NFL has decided to go with a PR nightmare, Johnny Manziel, Michael Sam, you haven't heard any of those names. You haven't heard of Tebow. They could all sign now. People might not notice.
Well, Tebow,
I think, gone for a while.
He's working on the SEC network now. He's got his nice little
second. Good Morning America recently. Yeah, I heard something. Yeah, he got on like some network.
The one thing I know for sure he's doing is that he's doing the SEC network that ESPN kind of launched for them. That they're gonna do kind of rival the Big Ten network and the Pac-12.
I always wonder if he never got a job because of the media attention he would have brought.
I mean, you knew at some point he would probably work at ESPN just the way that
I'm saying a job in the NFL because he wasn't good at quarterback. I mean, I thought it was always interesting because he wasn't a great quarterback, but somehow he found a way to win. But that's what really counts. But then he had a list of things that went against him. Peyton Manning going to the Broncos. he had a choice, I think, to be traded to the Jets or Jacksonville. For some reason, he went with the Jets, which was probably the worst decision of his career. You know, sitting behind Sanchez, then under Rex Ryan, that never worked out for him. He went for like a couple, you know, weeks in training camp with the Patriots. That didn't work out well, and that was the rest.
The biggest thing for Tebow is that he wanted to be quarterback, and he wouldn't switch to different positions. Teams wanted him to play like maybe a fullback position or a tight end, and he wouldn't do it. I want to play quarterback. But the other one is Tim Tebow now, in today's NFL, not the best player. If he would have played maybe 10 years ago or even, you know,
no,
in the old NFL, he would have probably been a Hall of Famer in the things that he can do physically.
He's one of those, you know, the greatest college, you know, football player out there, but his game as quarterback didn't translate into the NFL.
No, the things that Tim Tebow was good at, you don't want to do in the NFL because you're not going to play in the NFL very long.
And there were some similar questions, not to the same extent with Johnny Manziel, you know, he under center and stuff, but I want to see Johnny Manziel, you know, soon, although I question whether it's the right time to put him in.
Well, because you look at it as Brian Hoyer kind of led the Browns to a win last week on there. So he's, what, 4-1 now as a starter for the Cleveland Browns?
And he would have started. He got hurt last year. I think just got the starting gig.
They had the three wins in a row there, and then he tore his ACL.
Correct.
So he had the injury coming back from the injury. And you're looking at, you know, do we draft Johnny Manziel? Do we get something, another piece for our defense? They go ahead and draft Johnny Manziel. Now you have the whole thing of, do we start Johnny Manziel?
And I always think starting, you know, quarterbacks learn from starting, but also I feel don't throw them in too early. Like you had David Carr, you know.
David Carr was a great quarterback, though. The thing that really hurt David Carr is that he had no offensive line.
That's what I'm saying, throwing him in too early. You know, and if your team's not ready, there's whether the offensive line's ready, which is the problem with you have in Jacksonville now. Their offensive line looks horrible, and you don't want to put in Bortles yet because Bortles looked real good in the preseason, and I'm excited to watch him. He's a big quarterback, so he could avoid, you know, many sacks. The question is, if you have no offensive line, you don't want these people coming. You don't want J.J. Watt coming full force, you know, with no one protecting you.
Yeah, you want to avoid your quarterback getting hit as much as possible.
You were telling me an interesting story earlier related to football somehow. What was that all about?
Yeah, you're going to have a case coming up here in a little bit. There's a guy in Michigan, right? So he's walking along, holding a football here. He's going to throw said football into a prison. Now, it didn't go into the actual yard with the inmates. It's going to lie in a kind of a walkway between the outside gate and the inner gates there. But that football is filled with drugs and cell phones on there. So now the guy that was on the outside of the prison is going to be on the inside the prison for the next 16 to 60 months. Now, we should say allegedly, but so he's throwing some footballs into there.
That story just amazes me. Like, what you think, like, what, you know, inspired him to he maybe want to be part of the Longest Yard sequel?
Yeah, you know, going to relaunch the franchise. You know, Burt Reynolds is going to go another run on there.
Some people, you got to question certain things. But I think there's nothing, I don't think you'll ever understand an answer there. I don't think there can be an explanation for that.
No, that's one that you don't really see that often. And when you do, you kind of have to scratch your head for, you know, a couple hours thinking, why would you do something like that?
Unbelievable. Well, listen, it's not. I guess it's been a bad week for football in general, not just the NFL. Football, tonight you got Tampa Bay playing Atlanta. Who do you got in this one?
We're in Atlanta. I'm going with Atlanta and, you know, Matt Ryan. He's got Julio Jones back, healthy, looking good. Roddy White, a little under right now. Going to try to maybe pick him up a little bit. But it's got to find a little bit more out of the great Stephen Jackson.
Yeah, but do you think he's going to have a great game? Or what is he not done, but he's been in the league for a while.
You look at the wear that's on the tires there. Yeah. He's probably winding down. On there.
My question is if I should start him in fantasy, because I've been going through a bit. This whole football thing, you know, dilemma with Adrian Peterson. I have Adrian Peterson on my team, and I suspended him from my fantasy football as soon as the stories came out. Nothing to do with the NFL. But I don't have him starting. And my backup running back's No'Shawn Marino's hurt for the next 4 weeks. So I am left with Vereen from New England. And Maurice Jones-Drew from
Oakland.
That's not good. So I'm in bad shape when it comes to that. So I picked up Jackson off the waiver wire. My question is if I should start him.
You look at it, Tampa Bay's got a couple guys up front that you don't really want to run against.
McCoy, they got cracked, but they've been injured on the defensive side of the ball a lot this year.
And their defense, not so good. You know, you have Altron Werner now in the secondary as a signing from Tennessee. So maybe Steven Jackson could be a good one if they're trying to get things going offensively. Let's get the run game started.
Is Sean Goldston back? Or
I haven't seen him, no.
Because I know he's been suspended again. Like I'm just not sure. You always hear him getting fined, suspended. This is for on-field suspension. I think it could have been 6 games. I'm not sure off the top of my mind, but it's not the first time it's happened to him.
No, it's one of those ones that
him and Ndamukong Suh could probably enjoy a cold one.
Suh, Brandon Merriweather, maybe a little bit there.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah, we'll see what happens with that one. What games are you looking forward to this upcoming week?
This weekend, you have a couple of big games going around tonight. And on the college level, you're looking at Kansas State versus Auburn. That's going to be a top 20 matchup. So that's a big college game. You have SEC versus the Big 12. So you're looking at, the college football playoff. Is the SEC going to have another good out-of-conference win? Or is the Big 12 going to have, it's kind of a statement here for the bottom half of their league on there? But you look at around the NFL, you got Seattle and Denver Super Bowl matchup.
Oh, that's going to be great. Oh, again, rematch. Let's just hope we're not going to see the same thing we saw during the Super Bowl. And Seattle's coming off a loss to San Diego. San Diego looked real impressive. Phillip Rivers looks, ever since McCoy, the new head coach, he was there last year, came back, Rivers has looked like a new quarterback. And I don't know if it's North Turner's fault, why they were bad under, he's partially to blame. But he's looked, Antonio Gates did well.
Yeah, revitalizing the career of Antonio Gates there. It kind of went down for a few years, maybe wasn't the healthiest.
Correct.
But he's having them back.
They look good, and they beat Seattle. I don't know. I don't remember anyone beating Seattle like that in a while.
Oh, I think it's been since 2011. It's the first time that they've lost by more than 7 points on there,
wow.
Which is just in itself an amazing statistic in the NFL these days.
So you got Denver going up against Denver. Is Wes Walker going to play in this game? Because I know it depends on if the NFL can reach with the Players Union or NFLPA. If they agree to a new drug policy.
Welker was only a 2-game suspension, I believe, right?
It was originally a 4-game suspension.
So, he's back practicing with the team, so he should be good to go. Yeah.
Okay, so Josh Gordon's suspension, I think,
He's down to 10 games on
10
there.
Games.
So
okay, so they reached, because I know there were rumors that they reached an agreement, and then report falls, and then, back and forth. So.
Yeah, he's still working at the car dealership with Rhett Bromar for a few weeks, but he should be back.
He should be back. So that's going to be – look at Denver. So many offensive weapons. Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas, Welker, Emmanuel Sanders. He's a good wide receiver, and he's like the fifth best option on that team. Monte Ball's looking, all right. And, of course, you have Peyton Manning.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that Peyton Manning's always done is that he's, thrown to every tool he's had.
The thing about Peyton Manning is you could put him on a team with a bunch of no-names, and he still does good. But right now he's on a team with a lot of talent, not just no-names, on the offensive side of the ball. Demaryius Thomas was a good wide receiver before Peyton was there. And, hey, Peyton makes him way better. Julius Thomas, not so much. Well, he's young, but Wes Welker was a great wide receiver when he played for Tom Brady. And Emmanuel Sanders was a very, solid wide receiver when he played for Pittsburgh.
The one I look at when you talk about Peyton Manning and compliments, when they were doing the NFL's 100 best players and stuff a few years ago, Ray Lewis did his introduction on that piece. And he was saying, no disrespect to anybody on the Colts, but you take Peyton Manning away from that football team and they're a very below average football team. Peyton Manning leaves the Colts. He was injured for the year and they have the number one pick. So Ray Lewis knows his football.
That's the one thing he does know. And yeah. It's interesting watching on ESPN. The NFL misses. I love watching Ray Lewis, the passion and all that. All right, let's move on to enough with football. Too much drama around the sport, even though I love it. Baseball. What are your thoughts?
Baseball, getting down to the end of the season here. Last week and a half, 2 weeks here.
A lot of key matchups this coming week. I mean, as if the NFL baseball knew what they were that which teams were going to bat out with what.
Key matchups, big storylines going around. You have the Orioles clinching the AL East last night for the first time since 1997. Nationals clinched the NL
East. Something
you
don't believe until it happens, because Baltimore, every once in a while, they're a team that starts off hot And then baseball is one of those, you know, you gotta fight through. It's 162 games. And then they kind of fall out. But this year they've done it very solid. And they don't have any star name pitchers, really. They're very surprising, you know, that to clinch this division.
You know, they're one that they've kind of gotten together as a team to kind of accomplish what they have this year. Because you kind of look at it, everyone's still expecting Boston to come off the World Series there, but they're at the cellar again.
Yeah, you know, everyone's still expecting big free agent buyers in this coming offseason. And they got that Cuban player that they just signed, had his first hit, and of course it was an infield single. But with that speed, man, I wanted the Tigers to get him.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the other ones, the Tigers, you know, trying to hold off the Royals who are trying to get into the playoffs.
Tigers baseball. You can age from watching, as a Tigers fan, you can age from watching this Tigers team. On paper, they are the best team in baseball, well, in the American League.
At least through their pitching staff, definitely.
Through their pitching staff and their offense, well, the offense not so much, but even on and their pitching staff has three former Cy Young winners. And then you got Anibal Sanchez, who was the leader in ERA last year, and Rick Porcello, who's a very solid, you know, he's your fifth starter, and he's having a great year this year. Their bullpen, on paper, was supposed to be good. They got Soria from Texas midseason. They had Nathan coming off, you know, a great year. And then they had Jabba Chamberlain, who's doing good, even though he was a bit, you know, so-so towards his end of his time in New York. The Tigers, I'm telling you, they've seen that team. They started off great this year. They sucked, and they go all right, and they do good. David Price, since the trade, hasn't panned out too well for the Tigers.
Yeah, he hasn't had his ace stuff, but it's one that if they do get into the playoffs, you're going to be glad that you had David Price because he has the big game experience.
He does, but he's been so-so in his playoff career. And the question I'm starting to worry if the Tigers need a new pitching coach. Everyone's just falling apart. David Price, I don't have the stats in front of me, but with his time the entire season with the Rays, I think he had three games where he walked three batters or more. Since his trade, he's done that already three times.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Maybe it's a different ballpark, different thing. Maybe he didn't really want to leave Tampa Bay, and he's just, you know,
it's just
time to acclimate.
And who do you think is going to win this series? I think they have Verlander going for them in Game One against, but it's gonna be a great series.
You look at it, I think the Royals are a lot more, you know, hungry for it. It's something that they haven't had in a long time in
and
that
their
city.
Bullpen is so good, and you will not win a World Series in October without a solid bullpen. There is no way. That's what cost the Tigers last year. One of the things that cost the Tigers last year is that
the back end of the game.
That game where David Ortiz, I cannot watch highlights from that. That was, if you can't have someone close out games in October when you're going to be playing games that are going to be 3-2, 1-0, 2-1, 4-3, you know, close scoring games, you need someone at the end of the bullpen where you know is going to close out the game.
Then there's something you said earlier on there about, you know, the way that the Tigers have played this year. They're hot to start the year and they kind of went down. There's another team in the AL that's kind of really gone down kind of fast, and it officially cost them the division last night, the way the A's are playing right now. They have a great, great starting rotation. They add John Lester, but they trade away their best offensive player who probably would have left in the year
offensive
or two.
Player. Well, not only, but, and I mean, they got Adam Dunn, but Adam Dunn is, like, batting average is, like, below 200.
Well, that's, Adam Dunn's has never been a guy that's going to hit a high average for you.
No,
you're just looking for him to make one good swing that's going to change a game for you.
He strikes out twice a game and hits you a home run. That's what you look for, but that A's, it was all, I remember when the trades were happening, right? There's nothing to talk about. It's A's and Tigers. And that's the media, right? You know.
Yeah.
These players just go in and focus on the game, not, you know, what's happening on the outside. But, yeah, the A's. And the question is, are you even going to win to make the wild card?
It's one that you have to look at, because even if they do make the wild cards, they have to win that one game. You know, can they do it?
The NFL could have a nightmare on their hands if Kansas City, Detroit, Oakland, and Seattle are finished and tied. That could cause a serious scheduling problem over there.
You're going to have to put the couple days on hold and kind of go through and figure everything out.
You'll have to first finish out who gets the wild card, I guess.
You.
Then you would have to go back to Detroit, who gets the division, and that would just be back and forth. In the NL, you also got a close one. You got, you know, between the Dodgers and Giants.
Giants-Dodgers coming down to the wire here. You know, you had the Dodgers kind of go up to San Francisco, open the lead up a little bit, get a couple breathing room. Then you go out to Colorado, and everything just falls apart. Giants right back in it, two games. And you have a big series coming up next week to kind of round out the year. on there. It's going to be one that's going to decide the division.
That's going to be great. San Francisco, you know, versus Dodgers, always a great matchup. Fans love each other. Yeah. Talking about the NL, you have the Washington Nationals. Very quietly, by the way. When I say quietly, it's not. They had a. They're in the playoffs. They clinched that division, and they have a solid team. Who do you think wins the NL this year?
Wins the pennant?
Yeah.
You look at it. You got to see who kind of picks it up in the next week and a half here, and accepts the challenge of the playoffs on there. If the Giants get in,
it's kind of their
MO the last couple of years is that they get into the playoffs and then they
find a way, and then from there,
especially
it's all...
from the second round in, it's that they just turn it into another gear and they run the table there. On there, but you look at the Dodgers, if they can get in, they expected to kind of be higher end because of all the money and the talent on the roster. But you have St. Louis, who's right back in it again. You know, they have a single digit, to clinch the division on there. But St. Louis has all the experience through their staff and all the guys that they have around there to kind of go back in there and get the job done again.
The Nationals are a very solid team all around. Starting pitching is fine. They have an offensive team. And then their bullpen's also pretty good.
You look at the Nationals, their second division title in 3 years. Last year they didn't quite get it because
they didn't make
some injuries and stuff like that. But you go into it, the Nationals, good team. Definitely one that you have to be careful for. And the biggest thing you look right now, National League, what's the MVP race going to do? You have Stanton now out for the rest of the year with the pitch he took to the face.
And he's been out for a while, for the past...
You have Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers on here, a lot of people are questioning, and definitely Cy Young on there, but it's the way that you have to look at it. He missed the first month of the season. That's why a lot of people kind of want to write him off for the awards. He missed the month. But if you look at it, he missed the month. He still has 19 wins, over 200
and a
strikeouts.
1.75 ERA or 1.73?
I think it's 1.70 or something like that, but it's still under 2 ERA.
And he's looked so good. The thing about... when it comes to MVP race, and you always have this discussion every year in and out, is he playing for a winning team or not? And Carlos Stanton isn't playing for a winning team, and the Marlins aren't going to make the playoffs. So not that I'm saying these are the discussions that go out there.
It's the discussion, but is it really fair? No.
No, it's not. Well, it's not necessarily fair. But however, whether he was on a winning team or not, I would have voted for Clayton Kershaw as my MVP. And there are people that will say that he pitches every 5 days. To me, that's not about necessarily – when he does pitch once every 5 days, he's as dominant as anyone in the business. Well, if you go by that logic, to you, a goalie in hockey would be the only choice as MVP because 90% of the players don't play. They play like 25, 30 minutes a game at max because they're switching in. There's five lines. So it's not necessarily who plays the most time. It's, like you said, most valuable.
You look at it, Giancarlo Stanton was battling for the major league lead in home runs at the time of his injury. He was going to run away with the National League RBI win on there. So what do you take away from there? You have to kind of keep in mind what he did when he was there.
No, I don't know. Just Kershaw, it's been there's no answer for when he comes out the pitch.
No, I mean, every fifth day, the teams are expecting the Dodgers to probably, if not get the win, that you're going to have to play a perfect game to get it.
And he's looked like, I don't know, Kershaw in general, when it's not just this year. Over the past couple of years, he's looked like the best pitcher in baseball we've seen in a long time.
No, it's one that I was talking with my friends a couple of years ago, and they're like, oh, is Clayton Kershaw an ace? And I was like, at this point of his career, no. He has, problems with his pitch count. He's walking too many batters. He has, losing guys. He kind of fixed that, and now he's the ace that everyone thought he was, and he's really showing why people were comparing him to Sandy Koufax and his numbers with Bob Gibson and guys like that.
And how do you feel about the Dodgers? They have an all-around solid team. Their bullpen is a little shaky towards the back end.
The back end, you have some problems. Kenley Jansen, he's over 40 saves now, I believe. He's definitely solid at that position on there.
But
you go to the seventh and eighth, have some problems. Brandon League, Brian Wilson haven't had the greatest years, but you know that they have some experience in the closing games and they can probably get it done for you, that you'd hope.
Brian Wilson, he's been around for a while.
Yeah, Brian Wilson, he's had his fun in his career on there.
How cool would that be if he closed out a game against the San Francisco Giants that won the division for
I think Brian would probably actually be very happy about saying he had the problems getting his World Series ring from those guys.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
The second one, that is.
The second one, because he wasn't on the team any longer, and he was injured that year.
No, he was on the team. He was just injured. He wasn't...
Because he got injured earlier in the year, so they had Soria, I think, came in and took the position over, closed it out, but he left the team the next year. You know, his contract was up.
Correct. He was coming off Tommy John surgeries, or was that after...
It wasn't Tommy John. It was something else in his elbow.
That was when they won the World Series against the Tigers.
Yeah.
So he didn't play the entire playoff. So they didn't want to give him his ring back?
They didn't want to give him the ring, and he kind of had to go over and yell at the owners in the front office there to kind of give him the ring.
I think there is a minimum amount of games you have to play, though, to get your ring, although that's different. You know, if you started the season with them, I think you should be, you know, entitled.
Well, you look at it every once in a while, you have a trade deadline deal go through, where it's the guy leaves, one team goes into the other league. Happened a couple of years ago with Arthur Rhodes, where he played on both teams in the World Series. So no matter what happened, Arthur Rhodes was going to get a World Series ring on there. So it's one of those things that you kind of decide who gets it.
He got World Series from one of the ALers. Nothing beats the story. I don't remember a couple of years back when I think it was one of the coordinators for the Patriots or – That claimed the Russian president took his ring.
I think that was actually their owner.
Owner Bob Kraft.
Bob Kraft. Robert Kraft. You know, he offered Putin to try on the ring, and he just kind of kept it.
It was the owner. I thought that was again, that's part of our comedy section in sports. Wait, let's get to bum and champ of the week. Who do you have? Who's your champ and bum of the week?
For champ, I'm going to go college level. He's going to be a local quarterback, kind of stepped up. Jerry Neuheisel, Brett Hundley leaves the game, elbow injury. Jerry Neuheisel comes in, manages the game through two touchdowns, one to win the game late in the game, takes care of Texas, keeps UCLA on path to maybe get into the college football playoff, even though they have looked a little bit bad in the first three games. But 3-0, can't argue with that. But the other one you look at, have you seen the video of Rick Neuheisel celebrating the Pac-12 offices watching Jerry play on there? So if you're looking at home, I'd look up that video, because that's one of those ones that you can see is very special moments. Rick Neuheisel, former UCLA coach, former UCLA quarterback, kind of enjoying his son's moment, getting carried off the field at Jerry World.
Have you seen that video you mentioned of Bruce Bochy bringing in his son?
I haven't seen that one, no. I was watching the game, and I kind of got busy doing something else, but I kind of missed him bringing
that,
in his
kid. I think
that's
going to go with my champ for the week, even though it happened, I think it was last Saturday or whatever. I thought that was a real cool story. Father-son moment there, a dream. And it was the first time his son entered the game, and something funny that he said when he handed the ball to his son, it was bases loaded. They were down like 14-0 at the time or something. And he told his son, he's like, I'm sorry I had to put you into this position. And back to bum of the week. I would have to go again with the NFL, not the Minnesota Vikings. Even though that was taken care of, the fact that they reinstated Adrian Peterson kind of showed us all what their priorities were, and it wasn't caring for children that so claimed to be. And as soon as you saw sponsors dropped out, they found a way to get him back onto the deactivated list.
Yeah, it's not a good week for the NFL in general there, so it's definitely a big bum for them through there. You look at the Wolf's family, it's like, oh, we're going to activate him, whether that was their decision or front office.
And one thing that bothers me is when all these owners who are a lot of times behind it, they're just throwing out people. John Harbaugh, or the coach for the Ravens, shouldn't have to answer for what –
his players and stuff.
Or for his players or for his general managers who ever made the decision for anything. They're putting him out there. Football coaches, main purpose, and football coaches can deactivate players. However, the main coach, he should not be answering questions why the NFL only suspended Ray Rice two games or why Ozzie Newsome may have messed up and not, doing more research. That really wasn't his focus. In the offseason, he's talking about, his upcoming year, how he's going to, plays to, put in the playbook. So that when owners throw their employees like that out there, or their coaches, their general, back to general manager decision, for the Vikings. It was probably an owner's decision to allow Vikings, and he has to answer questions that he doesn't have the answer to.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, if it was an owner's decision or a front office decision, it's not one that you want to have happen. It's one that you should have realized, hey, you know, this is a situation that's bigger than football. Let's take care of it now.
They should have learned that, like, though, 2, 3, 4 days before.
Well, honestly, they probably should have learned it a few years ago after their boat party.
You just had an incident where Ray Rice, it was clear as day, you know, how to handle the situation. And to bring him back in was dumb on many levels.
Well, I think that's the other thing that caught a lot of people surprised was that this happened with the Ravens. The Ravens generally have one of the best front offices in football that they can take care of these things. And they kind of dropped the ball through here. They took care of it at the end, kind of letting Ray Rice kind of walk through there. But it took way too long for something to happen and for somebody to step up.
All right, before we head out for the week here, anything you're looking forward to in this coming week of sports that caught your eye that may be under the radar?
Under the radar, not really. I mean, you have everything very well covered right now. I mean, you're getting into the kind of championship weeks in baseball, championship weeks in NASCAR, stuff through there. You have baseball season winding down, basketball season ramping right up in the middle of the NFL. College football is getting right to the point where you're going to start seeing conference games kicking in. It's a great time to be a sports fan.
Yeah, well, it's a great time now as opposed to 4 weeks ago. It was 6 weeks ago before the NFL season started. It was painful. Hockey, we just finished everything. So we're kind of in the limbo. Anyways, that's all for us here. Thank you for joining us, Tyler.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
And thank you for tuning in to Inside the Game on KBCRadio.com.